I want to introduce to you our new campus pastor for our Riverside campus, Tim McPherson. Tim has been with the church for the past 7 years. Some of you might know Tim from his time as our Riverside student pastor, or you might know Tim from being the campus pastor at our Enchanted Hills campus. Some of you will also recognize Tim because he's spoken several times on the weekend. Well, Tim is a godly young man with a beautiful family. He's a gifted speaker and leader, and we are fortunate that he and his family are a part of the Sagebrush family. Tim is speaking this weekend, so would you please put your hands together and welcome Tim now.
Thank you. Hey, I've said it before, but my family and I, we are blessed by you. We love this church. We love Sagebrush. And so for just a second, if you are watching us online, I really want to encourage you. If there is a Sagebrush campus in your neighborhood, I want you to go on the Sagebrush app, find it, go check it out, because I can tell you from personal experience over the last 7 years, it doesn't matter what campus you go to. When you walk through the doors, Sagebrush feels like home. So we'd love to see you at one of our campuses, okay? Well, I am glad to be here, and I want to go ahead and jump into our message for today. I want to start, I'm always honest with you, I'm always relatable with you, and so I'm just curious, just for you, is anyone else like me, are you a chronic overthinker? You know what I'm talking about? Yeah, I got to see a few hands. That's when you take simple things and you make them overly complicated, right? Like, anyone do this with your finances, right? It shouldn't make sense. Like, we shouldn't be able to, you know, rob Peter to pay Paul and move money around, but somehow, even though it shouldn't be impossible for you and me to spend money that we don't have. Somehow, just like Congress, we find a way, don't we? You ever do this with friendships? Maybe they say something or they do something, you take it the wrong way, it stews in your brain, you overthink it, and it strains the friendship. Or even worse yet, what about the dating game? Isn't that racket overcomplicated? You know what I mean? I hated that because I was bad at it. Wasn't good. But you spend all this time trying to chase and pursue this person, playing it cool, and there's all these rules about when can you call back, how long should you wait, how many texts would you, and what does that emoji mean? I don't know, how do I interpret that? It's a racket, isn't it? Or how about this, you know what else is really complicated to me? Diets, right? There's keto, there's paleo, there's Whole30, there's intermittent fasting, and if you're a real Christian, the Daniel plan, right? And I'm convinced that the only reason we lose weight when we jump on the next fad diet that shows up every single year, the only reason we lose weight is because we are so focused on remembering all the rules we're supposed to play by that we just forget to eat. That's how you lose weight on that. Or how about this? Maybe you're like me because you love your kids. You're trying to raise them to be productive members of society. And because you care about them so much, does anyone else overthink, overcomplicate parenting, right? Because you can ask any parent in here, there are two places that we don't want our children to end up at: therapy and living in my basement. Grow up and get out of here, right? My whole point is I think it's really easy for you and me to take some of the most important parts of our lives and overcomplicate them because they matter to us. And I think we do the same thing with this thing called faith. I don't know if you grew up like I did, growing up in a church like this, but the studies are saying that there's a lot of people in my generation, at least, that they grew up going to churches that took faith in Jesus that should have been easy and simple, and really, they added a bunch of rules onto it and made it complicated. They had rules about what you could eat, what you could wear, how many times a week you had to show up to church. They had rules about what chairs or pews you could sit in. You can't sit in that pew because my granddaddy paid for it. That's my seat. Some of us, faith became really overcomplicated and a burden to us because as we grew up, life got hard and we kind of hit a wall. And at one point when we started having a hard time in life, what we were told was just to have more faith, right? You were told really to have blind faith. That's when you have questions, you stop asking questions. That's when you have doubts, you choke those down, you shut your eyes and you just obey. You just follow blindly. Friends, that's not a relationship with Jesus. That's a cult. Run. Get away from that. See, maybe for some of us too, faith became that for us. And all of a sudden, maybe for you or somebody you love, faith got so overly thought through, overly complicated that some of us, and we've experienced this, we looked at faith and said, if that's what it's about, I can't keep up. I'm out. Right? We know, we've heard stories of people that we know and love that looked at faith and said, hey, if it's all about rules and all that stuff, I don't want it. It's too complicated. It's kind of like this. I heard a story of a grandfather who took his grandson camping after he graduated from college. The kid had gotten a couple of different degrees. He was known to be very smart, intellectual even. So grandpa takes his grandson camping. The two of them, they set up their tent out by a lake. And as the sun is setting, they cook dinner. And then finally, when it becomes night, they crawl into the tent and they quickly fell asleep. But about 2:30 in the morning, the grandfather starts kind of violently elbowing his grandson awake. And the grandson kind of wakes up and goes, "What?" And his grandfather says, "Well, look up. What do you see?" The grandson looks up and says, "Well, grandpa, I see a dazzling display of stars in the night sky." And the grandpa kind of shakes his head and says, No. What does that tell you?" The grandson thinks for a second and says, "Well, astronomically, it tells me that there are millions of galaxies out there with billions of stars. And meteorologically, it tells me that there's not a cloud in the sky, that we're gonna have great weather tomorrow. And of course, theologically, it tells me when I look at the night sky, it tells me and reminds me that God is the creator of a vast and a grand universe. Grandpa, what does it tell you?" His grandfather shook his head and says, "It tells me someone took our tent." Taking simple things, overthinking, right? Here's what I'm hoping we're gonna see today as we open up God's word together. Here's the one thing I want you to come away with, and this is what I want you to go share with some people that maybe felt like they got burned on this thing called faith. Here's the reality: faith is really simple. We just complicate it. It really is, and there's a great story in the Bible. It's a moment in Jesus's life that tells us two things: what faith actually is and the difference it can make in our lives. See, on this particular story that we're gonna look at in the Bible, it's in the book of John, chapter 9. It's this moment where Jesus has been kind of pushing back against the religious elite, the religious faith system of the day that was built by a group of guys named the Pharisees. And these guys did what some of us have experienced. They took God's law and they stacked a bunch of rules on top of it, and they made faith in following after God and worshiping God, they made it hard. They made it hard to keep the faith. They made it really, really complicated with all their rules. And so in this particular story, I love it because it's like Jesus wakes up on this day and goes, "You know what? I'm gonna pick a fight." And that's why I like Jesus. And so on this particular day, it's a Sabbath, which has extra rules about the work that you're not supposed to do. You're not supposed to do anything that resembles work. And the Pharisees have plenty of rules that are easy to break. And so Jesus breaks their rules. He's walking down the road and he comes across a guy that the Bible says was born blind. And I want you to see what he does with this. Look at this. John chapter 9 says this. It says, "Then he," Jesus, "spit on the ground, made mud with the saliva, and spread the mud over the blind man's eyes. And he told him, 'I want you to go wash yourself in the pool of Siloam,' which means sent. And so the man went and washed, and he came back seeing. He's been healed. But then his neighbors and others who knew him as just a blind beggar asked each other, 'Hey, isn't this the man who used to sit and beg?' And some said he was, but others said, 'No, he just looks like him.' But the beggar kept saying, 'Yes, it's me. I am the same one.' And so they go, 'Great, so who healed you? What happened?' And so we told them," here's his story, "'the man they call Jesus,'" because that's all he knows is just this guy that I've heard of named Jesus. That's all I know is his name. "'The man they call Jesus, he made mud, spread it over my eyes, and told me, go to the pool of Siloam and wash yourself. So I went and washed, and now I can see.'" That's my story, guys. And then I think this is really interesting. Instead of celebrating, everybody around him, they ask him what I think is a rude question. They go, "Okay, great, so Jesus did this. Where is Jesus now?" they ask, and he has to go, "I don't know, I was blind," right? That's a rude question to ask. But you think about how this story starts, and I'm just gonna say the quiet part out loud. This one's kind of weird, isn't it? Like, Jesus walks up to this blind guy and he spits in the ground and he makes mud. That's strike one. He's working on the Sabbath according to the Pharisees. He's breaking their rules. But then he takes the mud and he wipes it all over this guy's eyes. Now imagine doing that today, like here in Albuquerque, where we're at. What would happen if you did that? You'd get cut, right? And I wouldn't blame you. So that's a weird start to the story, but notice this too, is that this guy, Jesus puts this mud on his eyes and then says, "I want you to go and wash that off of your face." And this guy actually does what Jesus tells him to, which is not what I would have done. I don't think it's what you would have done either, right? I mean, somebody, if Jesus walks up and you don't know him and he puts mud all over your eyes and he says, "Now go and wash," you go, "Uh-uh, we're gonna talk right now, right here," right? So it's strange that this guy actually says, "Okay, I'll go and I'll do what you say." Notice he does what Jesus tells him to before he's been healed. And you gotta stop for a second and ask, why? Actually, we really need to wonder what's going through his mind, because again, this pool that he has to make his way to, it's not nearby, it's through the city. And again, he's alone, and he's blind. And so he's hoping he can remember how to make it to that pool. And again, he's kind of stumbling through the streets. You have to imagine he's got a hand along the wall maybe to guide him. And when the wall's not there, he's got to put his hands out in front of him like you and I do in the dark. As he's walking, people are probably bumping into him. He's certainly bumping into other people. He's stumbling, he's tripping, he's falling on his knees and his hands and have got to be kind of roughed up a little bit. And the whole time, this slow process gives him enough time to ask the same questions we would ask. Why am I doing this? Why am I even here? Why did I walk away? I mean, I've got to beg for money so that I can eat tonight, and I just walked. Why would I do that? And what good is this even going to do? Can I even trust this Jesus guy? And yet, it's exactly what he does, step by step, with all of his questions, maybe some of the doubts he has. He does what Jesus tells him to do, even when it doesn't make sense. See, I love this story. It's actually one of my favorite in the Bible because this guy in the story, he's kind of my hero. He gives us a really simple picture of what faith is. Faith is trusting God enough to do what he says. That's it. I'm not gonna stack other rules on that. Faith is trusting God enough to simply do what he tells us to do. And notice what we're not talking about right now. We're not talking about believing, right? Because belief and faith are similar, but they're actually two very different things. Like, for example, think about this. You believe a lot of things that haven't changed your life, right? Like, we all believe that eating healthy and exercising, that those are good things that we should do, but it's just belief and it never changes your life unless you eat your veggies and go to the gym. And you can't make me, I won't do it. I won't. Maybe this, you believe, right, that work should not be the end all be all to your value and your worth in this world, that you are more than simply a paycheck or a job title. We believe that, but that's all it is. It's just a thought in your mind. It's just a belief. As long as you keep working long hours and robbing your family of time with you, we're just all talk, aren't we? How about this? Maybe you believe that we should be kind, caring, compassionate, forgiving people like Jesus tells us to be. We should be that, and we believe that until we find out that Steve from the office that we work with, that all the way back in November during the election, he voted for somebody I didn't like, and now I don't know how to feel about Steve. We believe a lot of things that don't change our lives. There's a difference. Faith is not just belief. What we're talking about is faith is belief in action. And again, you have to go back to this guy in the story, because think about it. Think about the timeline of events. When does this guy get healed? Was it before? Was it during? Or was it after he did what Jesus told him to do, after he washed the mud off of his eyes? It was after, wasn't it? And again, I like his story because it should parallel ours. This is how it works in my life and in yours, right? Just like him, I was once blind. Just like him, I was stumbling around in the darkness and lost, and thank God he sent Jesus to work on me, to do some work in me. In fact, I want to highlight this too, is that Jesus is the one that shows up in our lives. He does all of the work, right? I'm not saved. I can't save myself. So Jesus does all the fixing, all the healing. Jesus does all of the work to save me. But in this story too, Jesus shows up in our lives and he expects us to, like the guy in the story, respond in faith. Because if we won't do that, then it's like he's wiped the mud over our eyes and we go, nah, I don't really feel like it, right? So we wonder why our faith doesn't make a difference in our lives. We wonder why sometimes it doesn't seem like things are changing. It's because when we have real faith, more than just belief, when we really put our faith in Jesus, it should change us, shouldn't it? It should transform us like Jesus talks about. It should transform us from the inside out, which is exactly what happens with this guy in the story, doesn't it? I mean, he comes back seeing, and it says that all of his neighbors, all the people that knew him, they couldn't believe that this was the same guy. They couldn't recognize him after the transformation that Jesus made in his life. Let me ask you, would people say the same thing about you and me? Like after you leave church today and you're on your way home, or maybe you stop at Chili's or Outback, I don't know where you go, but maybe you imagine that you go there, and what would happen if you ran into some people that you grew up with? Like some people from your high school years, maybe you bump into some old college buddies, you know, the dark years. Maybe you run into some old neighbors, some old coworkers. If they saw you today and compared that with who you used to be and how you used to live, would they see the difference that Jesus is making in your life? Would they? Or would they not? See, what I'm really asking is, are we doing more than just believing in Jesus? Are we doing more than just talking a big game? Are we taking the things that Jesus has told us to do, that Jesus has said are right and true and good in our lives? Are we taking those things and actually applying them to our lives? Because again, if we're not, it's like Jesus showed up, he did the work, he put the mud on our eyes and said, now go and wash it off. And a lot of us have looked back at Jesus and said, you know what? I like it like this. It's exfoliating, right? I know Jesus, he tells us that we should forgive our enemies, right? Pray for those who persecute us. And we go, no thanks, Jesus, that's for somebody else. I like the mud. I'll stay here. Jesus says that you and I are supposed to serve others, to put their needs above our own, the same thing that Jesus did for us. And we look back at Jesus and go, I don't really have the time. You know, my schedule, I'll wash the mud off later. I just don't have the time to do that yet. We hear Jesus tell us, especially in this season of life, I know this is a challenge, but we hear Jesus tell us that we shouldn't store up treasures in this life on this earth, that you and I should take our time, our talents, our resources, and we should invest those things back into eternal things, back into the kingdom of God. And we look back at Jesus with our eyes covered in mud and go, you know what, Jesus, I'd be happy to do that as soon as you bless me. As soon as I get the job that I've been praying for, as soon as this deal comes through, well, if you'll help that deal come through, then I'll do what you tell me to do. We stand there blind in the darkness with mud over our eyes, wondering why it feels like our faith after a while isn't doing us any good. Worse yet, you can look around, the world looks back at us and wonders the same thing. They go, hey, what's the difference between you and me? You're just as blind as I am. What's the difference between the two of us? See, what I'm getting at, and this is a cautionary tale just for me too, because I'm guilty of this. It's really easy for us to come into a place like this and lift our hands and worship God for who he is. It's really easy for us, isn't it, to talk a big game about how much Jesus means to us, to say that we believe with Jesus, believe in Jesus with everything we've got. But here's the reality, that until we have faith, until we trust Jesus enough to do what he tells us to do, until we have faith, we're just all talk. Nothing's going to change in our lives until we trust Jesus enough to do what he tells us to do. So here's the question that I have to ask myself on a daily basis. I heard somebody ask this years ago when I was back in college, and it has kind of lived rent-free in my head, but here's how I make sure that I'm doing this, that I'm falling in line, that I'm not just talking a big game about Jesus, but I am actually trusting him, doing the things that he's told me to do, letting him change me from the inside out. Here's the one question I have to ask myself every single day as his follower. It goes like this. Do I look more like Jesus today than I did yesterday? Again, it's that simple, no extra rules, right? Because if I say that I'm a follower of Jesus, I am his disciple, then the end goal of my life is not necessarily good relationships, it's not making a bunch of money. The end goal of my life every single day is as his disciple, do I look like him? Am I growing in his heart for other people and his heart for God? Am I growing in his character? Can people see that difference and see that growing inside of me and see the change that Jesus is making in me? And so here's the thing. We go back to this story and we have to ask ourselves, like this guy, do we have simple faith like he does? Or do we just believe some really nice things about Jesus? Is he making a difference? You go back to the story and this guy, he's trying to figure out everything that he believes, but you can tell, right? His faith in Jesus, it's transformed him, it's changed him, and ultimately people freak out over this. They go, we've never seen this happen before. And so what does everybody do? They take this poor blind beggar and they take him over to the Pharisees. And all these Pharisees, these religious scholars and experts, they surround this guy. Instead of throwing him a party for the fact that now he can see that he's been healed, instead of that, they put this poor beggar on trial. These guys all surround him and start peppering him with questions. And there are questions like, hey, what happened? Tell us your story again. You said who healed you? And he did what? You said Jesus healed you? That sinner? That's impossible. Were you really born blind? You must be lying to us. This is impossible. And again, I love this guy in the story. We never hear his name, but I wish I knew it, because this guy, surrounded by all these religious experts, he looks back at him, he says, listen, all I know is this. I was blind, Jesus showed up, he worked on me, I did what he told me to, and now I can see. And this just makes the Pharisees more upset. And they're really upset, not just because Jesus, get this, has broken their rules, because they expect Jesus to follow them. But not only that, notice this, they're really upset because of what Jesus did specifically, that Jesus healed a blind man. See, that's one of the most important parts of the story that I learned recently. Did you know that up until this chapter in the Bible, John chapter 9, did you know until this point, God had never healed the blind? He held off on that. You can go back to the Old Testament. God never once gives sight back to the blind, and that was for a reason. You see, God made these promises, these prophecies in the Old Testament to let us know that this is what you need to look for to know who the Messiah, the Savior of the world is. And one of those promises, one of those prophecies is God tells us that when the Messiah comes, he will open the eyes of the blind. And that's why the Pharisees are really upset. This is a clear sign to them that Jesus really is who he says he is, if this is true. And they don't want it to be true. Because again, they want Jesus to negotiate on their terms. They want Jesus to show up and follow them, to fit into their complicated faith system of religion. They want Jesus to follow them. And so faced with this fact, they don't want this to be true. And so what do they do? Like a lot of other people, they shut their eyes in unbelief. And all they want to do is discredit Jesus and say he's just some lawless sinner and a rule breaker. That's all he is. And so again, they're passionately trying to put this guy on trial, and they keep asking him the same questions over and over and over again. Tell us this is not true. And finally, this guy snaps. This poor beggar can you imagine? He was blind, now he sees, and now everyone doesn't believe him? This is supposed to be the best day of his life, and it's becoming the worst. It's becoming really stressful. But I love this guy, because as he is surrounded by all these theologians, all these religious Bible scholars who have made this overly complicated system of faith, what does he do? He stands up and he gives us one of the most simplest, clearest statements of faith you'll ever hear. And he's no Bible scholar. But here's what he says. He says this in response. He says, I don't know whether he's a sinner, the man replied. In other words, I don't know all the things that you're asking me about. But let me simplify it for you, fellas. I know this. I'll shorten my story. I was blind. Now I can see. Simple faith. It's what I want. Guys, I don't know all the answers to everything you're asking, but here's what I know. I was blind. Jesus showed up. He did something, and I can see. And we love this statement of faith because it tells us something really insightful here, is that Jesus didn't just open this guy's eyes physically. He opened his eyes spiritually, didn't he? And I love this, that this guy, he's saying, listen, I don't have to have all the answers to see the light. I don't have to have all the answers to follow after and trust Jesus. That's simple faith. It's like this. I heard the story of a little girl. She's in first grade. You know, if you know first graders, they have lots of questions, don't they? And so she's in first grade, and one day they're teaching, they're talking about and learning about big blue whales. And she's really excited about this. And so at one point during the lesson, she raises her hand and says, hey, teacher, can a whale swallow a person whole? The teacher looks back at her and says, no, that's impossible. Whales have these pleats in their throat that they filter out the food and the krill. Like, that can't happen. And the girl says, okay, but what about Jonah, right? What about Jonah? Now the teacher's annoyed and says, I'm telling you right now, it's a scientific fact. Blue whales cannot swallow people. Now the little girl just gets indignant. She says, okay, fine. When I get to heaven, I'll just have to ask Jonah myself if he was actually swallowed by a whale. Teacher's annoyed at this point, and he snaps back and says, okay, fine, but what if Jonah went to hell? And she said, then you can ask him. I have taught my daughter that joke. Because just like her, and just like the guy in this story, we don't have to have all the answers to everything everyone asks us. We just can know what we know. And this is a lot of our stories, isn't it? I was blind, I was stumbling, and I was lost in the darkness. My life was not good. And then by the grace of God, Jesus showed up. He did some work in me. And then when I actually did what he told me to do when it comes to my marriage, to my boss, to my work, to how I love my kids, to how I let go of my past and my anger and my resentment, you fill in the blank. That when I actually did more than just talk about it, but when I trusted Jesus to do what he told me to do, it changed everything and it opened my eyes. Friends, that is the difference between this guy in the story and all these Pharisees, isn't it? I mean, all of them have a lot of questions, but not all of them want to hear the answers, right? This is how I like to say it. Doubt asks questions, and that's okay, but unbelief refuses to hear answers. Which one do you have? Right? Because some of us, we grew up like I did, and you were told that you were supposed to have complicated, blind faith where you don't ask questions and you don't have doubts. And I want you to hear this very clearly today, that friends, you can follow Jesus. You can put your faith in him. You can do the things that he tells you to do. And it's okay to ask questions, isn't it? Your questions and your doubt don't necessarily disqualify your faith and your trust in Jesus. And if you have young kids like I do, you know this is true, don't you? Like, I have two young kids, and they love me, and they trust me, but boy, do they ask me a lot of questions, right? From sun up to sun down. Last night, I walked past my son's room, and in his sleep, he's mumbling questions to me. They ask me these questions, but it doesn't mean that they don't trust me. That's the kind of relationship that Jesus is inviting us into, to say, hey, you can follow after me and you can have questions and we'll figure it out along the way. But do you trust me enough to let me transform your life? Do you trust me enough to do the things I've asked you and told you to do? Do you trust me? And so what I think is so sad for the Pharisees in this story, isn't it? And maybe it's sad for some of us too, because here's what I know is true. Just like for the Pharisees, for some of us too, Jesus is standing right in front of us, and in unbelief, we have eyes that are tightly shut. And the tragedy is that in Jesus, you will find, I promise, you will find everything that you are looking for in this life. I know this to be true, right? I know what I know, that in Jesus, I have found a sense of peace that surpasses all understanding, not just a quick fix to the busyness of life, but peace. In Jesus, I have found out the impact that true selfless generosity can make. In Jesus, I have found not just the power of forgiveness, but with his help, I have found the power to forgive and to be set free. In Jesus, maybe you feel this too, but in Jesus, for the first time, I found the sweet relief of what it's like to find my identity and my worth in who God says I am. That I don't have to spend the rest of my life desperately trying to make a name for myself or please other people, because I can rest in the fact that because of Jesus, God looks at me, calls me son, and says, I am well pleased in you, and I will rest in that for the rest of my life. In Jesus, you can have and you can find the fullness, the abundance of life itself. And so here's what I want us to think through for just a minute. Here's the reality that in Jesus, you find everything you're looking for. Here's the reality though, you have to be willing to admit when you've been blind. That's the Pharisees' problem. And for some of us, it's the same thing, right? Because just like the Pharisees, we don't want to admit that we've been blind, because just like the Pharisees, we want Jesus to negotiate on our terms, don't we? Just like the Pharisees, we want Jesus to show up into our religious system, into our faith system, into our beliefs and our understandings. We want him to do everything for us, and that's the end of it. And if he's not willing to model us and to follow after us, then we say, you know what? I want nothing to do with him. That's not fair. Truth be told, that isn't fair, because Jesus didn't come to negotiate. Jesus came into this world to offer you and I one deal. There's one offer on the table for us, and it is a great one. It is the best one you'll ever hear, and it goes like this. Jesus says that in him, he will offer you all of himself. He will offer you all of eternity. He will offer you all of heaven. He will offer to you all of the wisdom and the counsel of God Almighty, and he only requires one thing, you, us, that we would take our lives and we would surrender them over to him. What does that look like? Faith. That we would trust him enough, not just to talk a big game, but that we would trust him enough to put our faith in him and do the things that he's told us to do and let him lead us into a full and an abundant life. And the Pharisees, they won't do it. They keep their eyes shut tight and they kick this guy to the curb. They're so frustrated and mad with him. They reject him. They throw him back into the streets, and eventually Jesus comes and finds this beggar once again. And at this moment, it's beautiful, because this beggar's faith is suddenly made sight when he sees Jesus again. He immediately falls down on his face, and he begins to worship Jesus for exactly who he is, God in the flesh, come to save us, come to bring us back home. And I love this part of the story, because now we know exactly why Jesus wanted to pick a fight today. Because he says these words when that guy begins to worship him. The next verse says this. It says, then Jesus told him, I entered this world to render judgment. Here it is, to give sight to the blind and to show those who think they see that they are blind. Which one would you be? Because again, you have to be willing to admit when you've been blind. So here's the warning for today that I see, is that according to Jesus, we are better off to be blind and know it, to admit it, than to sit there and think that we have sight when we're really blind. And Jesus said, that's why I came, to show you that, to show you the reality of your situation, to show you that you need me. It's kind of like this. Here's a little bit of a parallel. I was reading a story about a mining explosion that happened back in West Virginia. And it was a bit of an accident. It wasn't supposed to go off the way that it did. It was more powerful than it was supposed to be. But when this explosion went off, it ended up trapping a group of miners in complete and utter darkness. Like, they couldn't even see their hand in front of their own face. And so they're sitting there waiting to be rescued, and the rescue team begins to dig and dig and dig. And the first thing that they are able to do for them is to take a lantern, turn it on, and lower it down into the darkness so these miners don't have to wait in darkness to be rescued. So you have to picture this for just a minute. All these miners are sitting around this lamp, this lantern. This is the only light in the middle of the darkness. And while they're waiting to be rescued, eventually one of the young men, one of the other miners, he's really young, he kind of gets frustrated and he just suddenly blurts out, "Well, why don't they turn the light on already?" And that's when it dawned on all the other men there. They looked at him in shock and they realized that the explosion had taken this young man's sight, that he was blind. But don't miss the parallel here. See, in the darkness, he didn't know he was blind. It was only when the light came that it was revealed to him, shown to him and everyone around him, the reality of his situation, that he's blind. And Jesus would say that's exactly why he came into the world, to be the light. One chapter before this, look at how Jesus describes himself. He says this, he says, "I am the light of the world. If you will follow me," that means put your faith in me. "If you will follow me, you don't have to walk in darkness any longer." That means you don't have to keep living the way you've been living. It's not working. He says, "If you'll follow me, you won't have to walk in darkness because you will have the light that leads to life." Jesus says, "You will have me." So it's kind of like this, that Jesus is kind of like this light, this lamp. And in the darkness of our world, in the darkness of your life, in the hurt and the pain, the tragedy, the loss, man, in the seasons of doubt and confusion and frustration, with all of your questions, here's the one thing you should be asking: can you see the light? Can you see Jesus? Or are you standing there in unbelief with your eyes closed tight, with the fullness of light, the fullness of life right there in front of you, and you can't see him? Friend, maybe today is the day that you open your eyes and you walk towards the light that leads to life. How about this? Maybe for some of us in here, you're not blind, but man, you really can't see things clearly. Why? Because you have mud all over your eyes. And so I want to ask you, what is the one thing that Jesus is telling you to do? The one area of your life that Jesus is asking you and telling you to trust him in enough to do what he says? Is it something in your marriage or how you're raising your kids? Is it something inside of you, a flaw, a character flaw inside of you that he is trying to change inside of you? But maybe for some of us in the darkness of this world, we've just held on to it because it's all we know. And we know it's not right, but it's all we were given. It's all we know. Friend, today is the day that you let go of that and move towards the light. Whatever it is for you, here's the question that we have to wrestle with today, that light has come into the world. Light has come into our darkness. And the question we have to ask is will we do what Jesus says? Will we do more than just talk? But will we put our faith, our trust in him? Will we go wash the mud off of our eyes, open them, and then follow Jesus into the light that leads to life? I don't know what you're going through. I don't know all the questions, the challenges that you're facing right now. I don't know the loss that you've experienced. And friends, the reality is I can't answer those questions for you, okay? So I'll go back to our story today. Just like the beggar, I'm gonna tell you the truth. I don't know about all that, but I know what I know. That when it feels like I am lost and stumbling around in utter darkness, I know this, that faith, Jesus, that is all I have, and he is everything I need.